I guess you might as well do your thing.
Do
yeah?
My thing first.
Do you want the mic?
Is that one working? I could just use that.
No.
The mute one.
Oh, I'll just use that one then. Lovely.
You can stand next to me.
With that side off.
That's fine.
Is that everyone in? I would just go with it then.
I've got a couple of announcements. First off, I've been asked to show you this slide. And you can read it for yourselves. Secondly,
right, guys, I hope most of you probably met me before. It's just announced that the Comstock AGM is coming up on the 21st of March, around about 6 p.m. It's going to be in AT Level 4. And it's just basically the AGM is to get a new committee for next year. And all the positions are currently open, which include President, Secretary, Treasurer. Hang on, let me read the list. Vice President, Social Secretary and Technical Secretary, and second year rep for you guys. All the information is available online. It's comp-soc.com/AGM. You can find a link on the main website. It's a really good thing to do, lots of good fun. You definitely learn a lot from it. It's a chance as well, you know, if you're looking towards a kind of career path, you get to go and go speak to sponsors and such things. And you know what, if you didn't like something that this year's committee did, you can come in and change it, do something different. You know, if it's something that maybe an event we haven't done that you guys might have wanted, apply and you can come create that event and it should be good fun. I don't think there's really much else to say about the topic. But yeah, if you want to apply for any of the roles, if you go to the website, there should be a... Well, I think there's a web address in there somewhere that you can apply to. And I encourage everyone to do it. It's good, it's fun. You know, it's definitely worth a lot of your time. I think that's about it. Right, thanks so much then, guys.
Are there any questions about...
Yeah, sorry, is there any questions? Nope. That's fine. Right, thanks so much, guys.
So, yeah, I definitely encourage you to do that. We really rely on people in second year to provide the mainstay of support for CompSoc. So, it's up to you guys next. Okay, so today I'm not going to talk about interfaces, I'm going to talk about inheritance. So, what's that? I've got lots of stuff on my list, somehow it all got crammed into this lecture. See how we get through it. Shall I put the lights down, or are you okay like this? Up, down. So just going to return to encapsulation briefly. So we saw last time that it's a good idea to treat private instance variables as private. And if you do that, then you'll note that you can't read variables in client code which are marked private, and you can't assign to them. A bit of terminology, sometimes methods which read data are called accessor methods, and if it's a method which changes something there, changes the value, it's called a mutator method. And there's a convention in Java that if you have an instance variable called myData, if you want to read it, you have a method called getMyData, and if you want to change it, you use setMyData, yeah?
Are instance variables for classes private by default?
No. So this is something I mentioned last time. If you don't put an access modifier on a method or an instance variable, it will by default be treated as public. Thanks for asking that. So accessor and mutator are the kind of posh words. People quite often talk about getters and setters more informally. And here's an example of student class, got some instance variables. And we've got some examples here of getters for some of those instance variables. We could also have setters. Now, something that you might like to know is that if you use Eclipse and you've declared some instance variables, if you scroll down this source menu down to here and click on Generate Getters and Setters, it will ask you which instance variables you want to have getters and setters for, and it'll automagically produce them for you. So that's really handy. OK, so on to inheritance. UML. Some people love it, some people hate it. It stands for Unified Modeling Language. It's quite a rich set of conventions for describing software at different levels. And one level in UML is so-called class diagrams. And here's an example here. It's a little box, basically, and it's got the name of the class at the top. And then the two kind of panes, or panels. And the top panel is the instance variables, and the bottom one, the instance methods. And you'll sometimes see little minuses and pluses. So a minus is a way of signifying that's private, and the plus that it's public. You'll also sometimes see colons after the methods, which will show the return type of the method. So here's a couple of classes, or UML diagrams for them. And you can see that they're practically the same. There's only one thing different, which is this one that's got a tutor method. So there's duplication here, which in principle we'd like to get rid of. How do we do that? Well, one way of doing that is to separate out the bit that's different, and everything else that's in common, we're going to stick into a superclass, which we'll just call student. So here we've got a superclass which has got everything that's meant to be generic about students. And these two subclasses inherit all these instance variables and methods. And this diagram is a way in UML of showing that kind of inheritance. Actually, what we say is that this is a generalization relation. So this class here is a generalization of that and that. So you can find out more about UML following that link. So the only thing that PG Student has in addition to all this stuff is the tutor method. So sometimes all this stuff here, we call that members. So these are the members of this class. So that members covers both the instance variables and the methods. And other than thing about naming, sometimes people call these fields rather than instance methods. So for example, if you look at the Sun or now Oracle documentation, they'll often talk about fields rather than instance variables. Okay, so we've got a subclass like UG, which inherits all the members of the superclass. And we can also say that the subclass is a specialization, or the superclass is a generalization. And I'm going to say more about inheritance later on. So how do we decide if something is a subclass of something else? Well, there's a so-called ISA test, which is, can we say that the putative subclass, the thing we think might be a subclass, does it have the ISA relationship to the superclass? What that means is, does every instance of class X have the properties that every instance of class Y has? Or another way, more a quicker way of saying is everything which is an X also a Y? So, is kitchen a subclass of room? Yes. Is room a subclass of house? No. Is violinist a subclass of musician? Yes. Is sink a subclass of kitchen? No. Okay, you all got this really well. Is musician a subclass of person? Probably. Is Lady Gaga a subclass of singer? Why not? Putting aside her musical abilities, give me a musician you like, or a singer you like. Sorry? Have we got any votes for singers here? Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan, all right. Some of you have heard Bob Dylan. Okay, is Bob Dylan a subclass of singer? Some yeses. Max? So, is Lady Gaga a subclass of musician? No. Well, no, because Lady Gaga isn't a subclass, isn't a class. Yeah, I mean, that's your point, right? So, the idea that Lady Gaga or Bob Dylan or whatever would be an instance of a class, so it's an instance of musician, not a subclass, or an instance of singer. So, yeah, it's a kind of confusion there between instances and classes. Student subclass of musician? You're not all musicians. Okay. So, in Java, we use the term extends, and we'll see more examples of this, at the top of your class. If you want to say, the class I'm now defining is a subclass of another class, then you say it extends that other class. And by default, anything that you inherit into your subclass, any method will have exactly the same interpretation, the same implementation. Actually, strictly speaking, you only inherit the public members of the superclass. And that causes some issues, which I'll come back to. Also, you only have the implementation of your superclass methods if you don't override them. So what does overriding mean? So here's an example. There's a superclass doctor, which has a treat patient method. And that's inherited by surgeon. But it's also overridden. So this method here will be actually inherited by both this class and this class. But this one overrides it. And they both add methods of their own. So when we say that these subclasses here extend this one, that's literally true here in the sense that we're adding new behavior in the subclasses. So a surgeon can do more things than just your generic average doctor. It can cut people up. He or she can cut people up. Family doctor can give advice. Don't drink 8 units of alcohol every day. So this again is generalization. This is an overriding method. For some reason, there's another link to UML here. So public class doctor has a method treat patient. When we define surgeon, we say extends doctor. And the idea here is that I've defined treat patient again with some new stuff in the body of it. And by defining it again, I've overridden whatever I would have inherited from doctor. And I've added a new method. And this has to be, as always, a new file, put in a new file of its own. So when you're building your systems with inheritance, in this case you'd have two classes, a doctor class in its file and a surgeon class in its own file. So you'd have two classes, one of which inherits from the other. Similarly with family doctor. So what is overriding? Notice that in this case it had the same name and it had the same return value and it had the same argument list, namely none. So in general, if you want to override in a subclass B, you have to have the same signature, so the same name, same parameters, and roughly the same return type. And actually, I'll say more about return type later on. But for the moment, let's suppose it has to be the same. And you can think of the overriding method as replacing the implementation of the thing that it's overriding. So this is replacing, this has got the method here for doctor. This has got an overriding method, which was defined in the surgeon class. And it's like we just plug this in place for the other one. Something which is maybe useful is there's a so-called hierarchy view, type hierarchy view in Eclipse, which has two bits to it. It has a kind of nested indication of the type hierarchy. So in this case, we've got doctor with subtype, subclasses, family doctor and surgeon. And here we've got the methods which are part of, in this case, family doctor. So you have to right-click on a class name and then select open type hierarchy. And then this will open. And you can see here the things in black are the methods which are defined in the class family doctor. The things in blue are all inherited. So some of them are inherited from doctor, some of them are inherited from somewhere else, and I'll say more about that later on as well. So I gave you an example where we had two classes. We started off looking at, what was it, undergraduate and postgraduate. And we saw they had common stuff, common attributes, common behaviors. And we thought, well, I don't want to duplicate all that stuff, so I'm going to put the stuff that's common into a superclass, and then I can inherit that into my subclasses and only say what's different about those subclasses. So here we've got the superclass has the common state and behavior. The subclass may have overriding methods. And I might want to carry out further abstractions, and I'll give an example of that too. Okay, so I said earlier on that you only inherited the public stuff from your superclass. So here's an example that we had before where we had student with, now we've got three instance variables. We've got a constructor that initializes those, and we've got three getters. So actually we don't really need setters because we're going to set them in the constructor. And I wanted to find undergraduate to extend student. So I've got a new instance variable, tut group, which is initially the empty string. And I've got a set method for it, and a get method. And I wanted to find a toString method. And that looks like it should work, because I said, well, we inherited all the instance variables, first name, last name, and trick, from the superclass, which is what we had here. But these are private. So actually, we can't do this. It will not work. Do you see? I mean, from what I said before, so these three things are going to cause problems. What we have to do, it seems a bit cumbersome, but this is what you have to live with in Java. You have to actually use the getters that you've inherited from the superclass. So this is the way that you get the first name, the last name, matriculation number. Tut group is all right, because that was something which is already defined in this class we're currently in. So you might think this is a bit cumbersome, but if we're going to take encapsulation seriously, we have to do this. And the reason is because I can subclass any class that you make, in principle. I can always say, all right, you've got this super important class that you want to keep encapsulated. There's nothing to stop me saying, all right, I'm going to define my class to extend your class. If I could then get hold of all your instance variables, which are private, then I could do anything I liked with them, and I could, in effect, completely destroy the whole notion of encapsulation. So that's why it is the way it is. This is something you need to be careful about. So just to summarize, so you cannot directly access private instance variables in a subclass. You can only do it via getters and setters, which presumably you'll have inherited from the superclass. Okay. But if you look at these type hierarchies, you'll see that everything has object at the top of the hierarchy. So, in fact, although you don't need to say it, even if you just every class you've defined has been a specialization of object. But you don't need to say it, because the Java compiler automatically adds that. And because every class you've defined has been a subclass of object, that means that you've got certain kinds of methods inherited. So every class by default has an equals. Everything has a hash code, which is a way of converting data into a fixed length integer. Everything has a toString method, and we've seen sometimes that's not very useful, the toString method that we get by default. And in fact, every time then that you've written your own toString method, you have done an overriding method. So you've already done overriding without knowing it. Okay, so I need some volunteers from the audience. Who wants to volunteer? You do, obviously. Take your hand up the volunteer. There you go. Oh, has it got two there? Or you can share it. Last one. No, last two. Or you can you can share it. Okay. So after 2 minutes of methods around the room. So here's an animal hierarchy. We've got animal class and subclasses. And everything here, lion, cat, wolf, dog, will inherit sleep and roam, but they're all overriding make noise. Okay. So here's an example of the animal class where we've got some definitions of sleep, make noise, and roam. And we've got lion, subclass of animal, which overrides it. Can someone give me an illustration of an animal noise? Was that the generic animal noise?
That was feline.
Oh, you're feline. Oh, well, hang on. Has anybody got a colour that said animal? Not make noise? What? All right, that's the generic animal, apparently. Who's got the lion? You're the lion?
Yeah.
You're the lion, okay. All right. Well, I didn't hear that very loudly.
I'm a liar.
No, I want to hear a real roar.
Roar, okay, roar.
Come on, bit better than that.
Roar!
Well, you have to kind of express your inner lion. Okay. Did we have the cat? Do it again?
No.
Very good. All right. Who's the wolf? Can I hear a wolf? All right. A wolf. Let's hear it once more with feeling this time. Is this a wolf or a werewolf? Okay, do we have a dog? All right, once more. Very good, I like that one. Okay. So here's an example of where we've got some client code that initializes some animals and then calls methods on them. So we've got Wolfie, which is a wolf, Lear, which is a lion, and then we call make noise on Wolfie, roam on Wolfie, and sleep on Wolfie. Similarly for Leo, so the bottom two, roam and sleep, are going to be inherited. And make noise are going to be the specialized versions that we define for those subclasses. Okay, so a howl. Okay. Who is doing an animal roaming? Someone. Do you just kind of do some roaming activity behavior? You could just verbalize your roaming or sing it.
Going over there, I'm going over there.
All right. Who is a sleeping animal? Who's in the. All right, do you want to do some sleeping behavior? I've actually seen some much better sleeping behavior in this very room. So that's good enough, okay. Okay, so that was our flat hierarchy. Let's go back to that picture. Now you might say, well, lions and cats have something in common. They all belong to the genus, feline, and wolves and dogs also have something in common. In fact, dogs, I never really know how to believe this, but I guess dogs are descended from wolves. And you get these little chihuahuas and poodles, and that was a wolf. Okay, so here's another type hierarchy. We've got intermediate classes. And they both override the Rome method from animal. So we've got the same as before for animal, but now we say, okay, the feline. So felines, let's suppose, are more solitary than canines. So wolves run in packs, and let's suppose, for sake of argument, that cats don't hunt in packs, although it's not entirely true. Okay, so who is a feline? Who a feline somewhere? Yeah, did you want to do some kind of representation of feline roaming? I know it's challenging. Okay, I like that. Hang on, don't sit down yet. Where was do we have a canine roaming? Who is the canine? Oh, were you roaming? Were you dog or canine?
A dog.
Was there a canine somewhere? Someone's hiding. Well, I have to imagine, let's imagine two or three of you getting up and running around the room, going woof, woof, woof. So that's the canine roaming. Roaming, I'm with my pack. Okay, so lion is now a subclass of feline. It overrides the make noise method. Lion? Cat?
Meow.
Okay. Wolf? Where was the dog? Yeah, you were the dog, weren't you? Come on. Very good. Okay. So this picture is actually somewhat complex here. We've got animal with a subclass canine with a subclass wolf. If we make a new wolf, Wolfie, and we call Wolfie make noise, that's defined down here. Roam is inherited from canine, and sleep is inherited from animal. So all of these behaviors are available for wolf, but only one of them is actually defined at the wolf level. The others are inherited. So here's an example of the same thing as before, I guess, but now this one is from canine, and this is from feline. Do you want to do it one last time? All together now. Do your thing. Come on. 1, 2, 3. You disappoint me. Oh! Okay. All right. Polymorphism. What is polymorphism? So polymorphism is kind of cool, but it's slightly, if you actually want to define it, it's a bit technical. So the idea here is that corresponding to every class is a type. So the type is essentially the signature of the methods in the class. And we've got a subtype relation. It's kind of ordering, written S subtype of T. If you can use S wherever you could have used T. And so S is a subtype of T, T is a supertype of S. And there's something called inclusion polymorphism, which is when all the subtypes can be treated as though they were the supertype. So let's look at an example of that. So far we've seen things like this. We've got a wolf object, which we create with the wolf constructor. We say it's a new wolf. We introduce a variable of type wolf and assign it the value of the object that we just created. So that's fine. But hey, we can do something else. We can actually put a supertype on the left-hand side. So the reference type for this object can be a supertype because wolf is a subtype of animal. So why would he want to do that? So here's an example. We've got an array list, and we want the array list to consist of all these things we've defined before: the lion, the wolf, the cat, the dog. Any of those types of things can go into this list. So animals can be any of those things. So we can say, all right, our array list is of, its parameter is of type animal. And because these are all subtypes, that works. So we can add Wolfie, we can add Leo, we can add Felix, we can add Rover. That's polymorphism. So, or inclusion polymorphism. We can define the supertype as a parameter for the array list. And then subtypes, all these subclasses that we've defined, will all fit in there because they are subtypes. And then what happens when we do this, do you think? When we loop over it, what will this do when we call make noise on all the instances of animals? Sorry? Make the sound of each animal, exactly. So what happens here is that we call the method that's appropriate for the particular type of the element that we're hitting when we do the loop. So we've added wolf, we've added other types, we've looped over it, and if A then is of subtype T, we use T's make noise method. So if we added, what did we do? We did Wolfie, Leo, Felix, Rover. Then when we go through this, we're going to have oh, yeah, and woof woof in succession. Okay, so this is a really cool thing about Java, and it's really nice to be able to use. Okay, overriding. So I'm now going to refine a little bit the notion of overriding. We already said the parameter list has to be the same. Return type has to be compatible. That is, the type of, okay, where C is overriding D, so the return type of C has to be a subtype of the return type of D. Remember that subtype is reflexive, so T is a subtype of T, so it can be the same. So if your return type is a subtype of the method you're overriding, then you're still overriding. What's this? Okay, so these won't work. This won't work because parameter lists are not the same. So this is not overriding. And this won't work because it was public up here and I've made it private. So I can't change, I can't make the accessibility more restrictive in the overriding method. Overriding, overloading, are they the same? No. So overloading and overriding are completely different things. Well, quite different things. They both start with over. So overloading is when we have two methods of the same name but different parameter lists. So in my class, I could define make noise with no parameter version and make noise that has a volume switch on it. And in that case, I'm overloading that method. I'm not overriding it. Print line can take an integer, a double, a float, a string. Print line is overloaded. So these are not cases of overriding. So the return types can be different with overloading, but you can't just change return type. You can also change the access levels. So this case will not work because why? Because it was void before, right? And now it's returning a string. So just change the return type will not work. And in fact, you'll get a compilation error. Abstract classes. So we've seen that we can have Wolfie, who's a wolf. We can create a lion and give it the supertype animal. But what would an animal instance be? Can I really create something that's just a generic animal as opposed to a wolf or a lion? So arguably, the way we set things up at least, the animal class is not specific enough to define any one animal, or any one species of animal. So we can make a distinction between concrete classes and abstract classes. Concrete would be things like cat and wolf, where we think we really know what an instance of a dog is, what an instance of a cat is. But feline animal, they haven't really got enough in them to tell you what an instance would be. And maybe we didn't really want them to have instances. They're just there to be extended. And so we're going to call those abstract classes. And if we actually say in Java, this is an abstract class, then Java will not let you instantiate that class. So if I can say abstract here, that means this is an abstract class. I can inherit from that, I can extend it, but I can't instantiate it. And we should probably treat animal as abstract in the way we set things up, and canine and feline. I can also have abstract methods. So maybe I didn't really have anything intelligent to say about what roaming is for an animal in general, or what making a noise is for an animal in general. What I've done here is say that these methods are abstract. That means I don't have to define their bodies. In fact, if I call them abstract, I can't define their bodies. I'll get an error if I do. I do have to put, so there's no curly braces after them, but I do have to put a semicolon after them for an abstract method. Why would I want to do that? Well, what I'm saying here is that any class which extends animal has to have a roam method and has to have a make noise method. So I'm just saying, this is part of the contract. You want to be an animal, then you have to roam. You have to make a noise. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah? Mac?
Why are there abstract methods in science versus?
Because I forgot to put a curly bracket. In the right place, I guess. Sorry, you're right, that's wrong. Move that curly bracket up there. Thanks for pointing it out. Yeah, they should just be methods at the same level as any other method, and that's completely wrong. Thank you for pointing it out. Must remember to fix that. So, roam and make noise, abstract, no body, da 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 da. Da da da. Yeah, you can only declare an abstract method in an abstract class. Here's the UML diagram for it, where I've actually said these are abstract. And I've used italics here to show that these are abstract methods. So you can use abstract classes when you have the same case when you have superclasses. You want to say that there are particular methods which are shared, but you do not want to define them. I guess I'm kind of running out of time. I'm going to quickly mention something called constructor chaining. I'll flip through this. Remember, we had this example before, a student which had a constructor which took three parameters to initialize those instance variables. Here's a case where a subclass is going to use the constructor of the superclass. So this case, we've got four parameters. So we've got first name, last name, matriculation number, and in addition, tutorial group. This has actually come off the bottom of the slide, unfortunately. What I've done here, this thing super, that means call the constructor of your superclass. So that means call student on these arguments and do the initialization, and then you'll inherit all that in your own class. And the thing that got cut off here was that you could also set tut group using, say, the set tut group method. Or you could just assign it directly to an instance variable. Okay, so to summarize, okay, important thing, in Java you can only inherit from one superclass. It's so important, I repeated it. Subclasses can add and override. A lot of people have some ambivalence about inheritance. It's sometimes possible to get very kind of spaghetti-like inheritance hierarchies. You can sometimes get what's called tight coupling between the subclass and the superclass, where the subclass depends on knowing a lot about the superclass, and that's not necessarily good for modularity. Possible that something in the superclass you're extending changes, and what you've done will then break. Okay, so just to wrap up here, we're now in week 9. So next week I'm going to do a review, and I'll also try and touch on something called interfaces in Java. The last exercise, which will count for assessment, is this week. So I may or may not do new exercises next week, but they won't count for assessment. So next week, the labs will still have demonstrators in, but they'll be more like drop-in labs. Week 11, 2 weeks' time, is a mock exam. And I know a number of you having correspondence with Kirsten about that. There won't be any labs, but the assumption is that there will still be tutorials and project meetings, but that will depend a bit on your tutor and also your timetable. Week 12, end of semester. Hooray. Yeah. Monday, I'm wanting everybody who's done projects to come and do a demonstration of them. And we'll do that in Computer Lab West on 5th floor. My plan at the moment is not to have labs in the last week, but if you want me to organize them, just to kind of revision, let me know and I'll see if I can organize it. And here's some reading. Okay, thanks very much. If you do that, then the instance variables won't be initialized. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
So the way I defined it, if you had a set method for them, you could create a student, but then you'd have to call set last name, set first name, and so on to actually initialize that data. Otherwise, they'll just be, they'll get their default values, yeah. Which would be null, because they're strings. Good question, thank you.
What is the override annotation there?
I'm not actually totally sure. I think it essentially just, you don't have to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it's used in Java doc, and it may be used in some of the things that Eclipse does, but I'm not sure the annotation, strictly speaking, is required for anything.
Well, what's like the general purpose annotations? I don't really quite understand them. I mean, I've seen them used before, but I don't. It seems like there's like a comment, but the system interprets it?
It depends. I mean, I ought to know the answer to this. It depends a bit on the context. So, for example, in JUnit.
Yeah, so I don't really understand. Like, to put a test annotation on it.
You have to put a test annotation. Similarly, in I don't think what other annotations there are. I mean, certainly in Python, annotations play a crucial role in the way in which the code is interpreted. I guess I should try and find out the answer to that. It's something that's never particularly bothered me enough to find out.
I've seen a test, but I've seen annotation.